Welcome to a special Beer Summit edition of It's All Politics from NPR News.
It's still my line.
Okay. I'm Ron Elf.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, the biggest subject in Washington today is beer.
It is.
It's beer. So what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Chablis.
There's no Chablis.
It's a beer summit. It's very exciting because every time I drink a lot of beer, I am very forthright about race.
I think this is a really great idea.
This is a great idea.
Hey, I know what. Let's get drunk and talk about race.
I mean...
With people of different races.
Right, like the 50-yard dash.
For example. Or some people who are slightly longer hitters.
Because I grew up in New York and I took the subway.
Wait. What? New York?
No, New York City.
Oh, interesting. You should have mentioned that at some earlier point.
And a lot of people, I used to see a lot of people on the subway all the time drinking, having had a lot of beers, and they would talk about race in very interesting terms.
Very, very, what could be called direct terms.
I think the N-word was heard a lot, knowledge.
I thought you meant Manhattan. My question is, what can be accomplished at this point? Is it still a teachable moment?
Well, I think, seriously, if Barack Obama, Henry Louis Gates, and Sergeant Crowley sit down together, I expect when they get up, there will be health care for every American in this country.
And I think it's
And there are a lot
time.
Of Americans in this country.
And I think it's about time. And it will be done without increasing the federal deficit.
No. But speaking of health care, because we're going to have the beer summit first, and then health care, perhaps a vote in Energy and Commerce on Friday, maybe?
Critical vote could still happen before the House is scheduled to leave town this weekend. And that would be in the Energy and Commerce Committee, which is the third House committee to take up the bill, and the crucial one because that's the one where the blue dogs actually have a strong presence and can make their preferences felt.
But I thought this election was about the kind of change moving to the other direction. In other words, the people who were demanding full access and public, all that stuff. Like, for example, why are the blue dogs winning and why are the liberals in the Democratic Party...
In retreat? It's all about the numbers. There aren't enough liberals in the Democratic majority in the House or the Senate, for that matter, to pass anything. They are only dominant within their caucus, not within the entire chamber of the House or the Senate. So they have to have the help of a few Republicans, perhaps. They may get a couple in the Senate. We'll talk about that in a moment. And they probably won't get a single one in the House, just like with the stimulus package and other major pieces of legislation. So they have to have a great preponderance of the Democrats. And to get to 218, 220, 225 Democrats, you need to include the more moderate or conservative Democrats we call the blue dogs.
But when you make concessions to the blue dogs, then you perhaps alienate many in the progressive/liberal wing, and they may not be so happy.
They will not be happy. And in fact, I would be so bold as to predict that if we do get a health care bill out of the House or the Senate, or if we get a congressional composite product that can go to the president's desk, most of the liberals in the House and Senate and in the country will not be happy with it.
Which begs the question, is this health care overhaul?
Yes, and it does beg that question, and I think the answer in the end will have to be yes, they will get whatever they can get in 2008-09, and they will say, we'll come back when we can later on to try to move it more in a direction that we prefer. What's the alternative? The alternative is no bill at all.
Status quo.
And a status quo, as the president keeps saying, is the most expensive option on the table that ultimately pleases the fewest people.
What's going on with the Senate?
Senate Finance Committee has the bill. There is another bill from the Senate
Health Committee. Chairman Max Baucus.
And Chairman Max Baucus has been convening a small group of people, Republican and Democrat, at the center point of his committee to be the people who can talk to each other most readily and come up with a bill they think can attract a few Republican votes and nearly all Democratic votes so that they can get to the magic number of 60 in the Senate and get something out. Probably will not happen in the Senate as a body until September. If it happens then, the committee might get a vote before they go home in August.
The polls show, and the NPR polls show as well, the public is souring on President Obama's approach, or at least the plan of health care. And as his numbers decrease, now, of course, Congress's numbers are worse, and Republicans' numbers are even worse than that, but Barack Obama, who's used to 60-65%, is now 50-55%, or in there
that range.
That range. Does that embolden Republicans to take a tougher line?
I do think it does, and it has, and they are going to take an extraordinarily tough line all through August. They're going to put tremendous pressure on every one of their members, House and Senate, to vote against it, whatever is in the final package, whatever is negotiated. And I think they will continue to do what has worked for them up to now, which is to characterize this overhaul as a government-run takeover of the healthcare system.
That's part of the vernacular already, right?
And that is what people are reacting to. And I think when you look at these polls and you get down into the details of the polls, quickly you see that people don't like the idea the government is going to take over their personal healthcare situation, their relationship with their doctor, their relationship with their insurance company. They think the government's going to take over all of that. And all the efforts by the president and the Democrats to say, that's not our plan. That's somebody else's idea. It's not what's coming out of any committee, House or Senate, certainly not what's going to come out of the Senate Finance Committee.
It would certainly never pass.
And it would never pass. So the Republicans are essentially running against a parody, if you will, or a
caricature.
A caricature of what they imagine health care would be if the Democrats could do anything they wanted. But it's not what's on the table, and it's not what's coming out of either the House or the Senate.
But more distressing to the White House and to the Democrats and Congress is that not so much that the Republicans are united and will vote against it, but what happens when Congress leaves for the August break and they're home. And, of course, you've seen the president in North Carolina and Virginia this week, but you're also going to see Republican members at home. You're going to see talk radio savage this bill at every opportunity, and with town hall meeting after town hall meeting. The polls that don't look so promising right now could even be worse in a couple of weeks.
That's right. And what the Democrats who favor this overhaul would have to do with their August time is try to get out there and emphasize to people that, number one, the proposals that are being considered are not the proposals that are being opposed on talk radio or by the Republicans. That's something else in somebody else's imagination. And number two, that the current system is, in many respects, the most expensive option on the table.
We still don't know what the bill is going to look like, what the final vote will be. We do know that before Congress gets out, there will be a new member of the U.S. Supreme Court.
That's right. They're going to confirm Sonia Sotomayor. She has already won easily in the Judiciary Committee, although the one surprise I think we've seen is that the votes are shaking out almost entirely on party lines. In the Senate Judiciary Committee, all 12 Democrats voted for her confirmation. All of the Republicans, save one, voted against it. And the one was, surprisingly, to some people, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, who had been her toughest questioner.
I would say I think that the reason it was surprising is because he was relentless in questioning her about her judicial philosophy, about the wife Latina remark, about if I were president, you would not be my choice. But he also said from the beginning that elections matter, that this is not the person I would have chosen, but Barack Obama was elected president. He's entitled to his Supreme Court nominee. Now, of course, Democrats didn't feel that way with the last Supreme Court nomination.
Although they did largely with John Roberts. Right. Half the Democrats voted for John Roberts.
22 yes, 22 no, but against with Samuel
Alito. It went the other way.
In January of 2006, it was 42 Democrats, including the independent, voting against Alito. And I think Republicans are either, part of it is payback, part of it is also the fear that if they make life miserable for Sotomayor / Obama in this go-around, perhaps Barack Obama will think twice before naming another liberal or even a more liberal choice the next time. Plus all these appeals courts nominees that are coming down the line. They want to set down their marker now about ideological change in the courts.
I think that's all correct, but I also think that a lot of these Republicans are feeling the heat. I had thought at least, that there would be 10, maybe 12, maybe a great deal more Republican votes for Sotomayor on the floor. It now looks as though there will be 6, 7, or 8.
Right now we have 6. And
we
the
have
big
six
news,
for sure.
Of course, is Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, the number 3 ranking Republican in the Senate. He is the latest, who follows by a couple of days of Lindsey Graham's announcement.
That's right. So there will be 2 from the South, plus Mel Martinez from Florida, part of the South.
Who is Hispanic
and said right from the beginning he was going to vote for. And we've also got a few more, including the 2 women from Maine, and also Dick Lugar of Indiana, who is kind of a traditional moderate conservative. Now, we've been waiting to see what John McCain might do out of Arizona. He still has not said. Lisa Murkowski in Alaska is a question mark.
Retiring.
And George Voinovich, who's retiring and who has lately had a lot of back and forth, if you will, with the National Rifle Association. I bring up the NRA because the NRA is scoring the vote on this Supreme Court nominee, which, to the best of my memory, it has not done on a Supreme Court nominee before.
Right.
And guns are a very big issue. A lot of people miss this after an election like 2008. They think, well, the pendulum is swinging against guns. The NRA is, I would argue, as strong as it's ever been in the Senate. It's been prevailing on vote after vote. They came up short, as you say, on the concealed weapon, but they got 58. So it's perhaps remarkable that all the Democrats, we expect, all the Democrats are planning to vote on the floor for Sonia Sotomayor's confirmation, despite the fact that for many it will ruin an otherwise perfect NRA voting score.
Speaking of the Senate, there are now six Republicans who are retiring in 2010, but the latest retirement is probably good news for the Republican Party.
It's certainly one they've been seeking. Jim Bunning, the Hall of Fame pitcher for the Cincinnati Redlegs and the Detroit Tigers, is
that's
that correct?
Philadelphia, I think.
And also Philadelphia, had a perfect game, was a marvelous baseball player. But it has not been smooth sailing for him in the United States Senate. And his own Kentucky colleague, Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, has been quietly nudging him towards the door.
Not sure how quietly. And, of course, when Jim Bunning, who's 77 years old, announces retirement this week, he basically blasted Republicans who have inhibited his fundraising abilities. Basically a veiled swipe at Mitch McConnell. But look, Mitch McConnell, John Cornyn have made it clear that Bunning is too cantankerous. 5 years ago when he won his second term, he won by 2 percentage points.
In a big Republican year.
Bush carried the state by 20 points. So it was, and plus the fact, his embarrassment when he said that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had 9 months to live.
She's got bad cancer. She's only going to be in my life for months. Yeah,
and it's not a question of, like, look, on Spector, they were glad to go because he was liberal and it was ideological.
And he was a pain.
well, Bunning's a pain, too, but not on ideological.
But it's a different kind of pain.
It is.
It's much more of a personality kind of thing. And also, and this is the most important thing, they're afraid they're going to lose the seat.
Right.
And now, with Jim Bunning out of the way, the Republicans have an apparent strong successor.
They do. It's the Secretary of State, Trey Grayson, who has been backed by McConnell from the beginning, who in his exploratory committee only has twice as much money as Bunning has in the second quarter. But you know who's also, there are other Republicans running, including Ron Paul's son, Rand Paul, who is a Bowling Green physician and may get a big boost from the Ron Paul network.
Now, on the Democratic side, who's it going to be? Going to be Jack Conway?
It is going to be Jack Conway. He is the state attorney general. He has raised over $1.3 million.
That's a lot of money in Kentucky.
And it's much more than the Lieutenant Governor Dan Margiotto, who barely lost to Bunning 5 years ago.
And he was
ago.
Running again largely because he did well against
right.
Bunning, and now that Bunning's out of the picture, maybe some of that mojo fades. Now, you say six Republicans already out for 2010, already retiring. And then on the Democratic side, you've got Ted Kaufman, who's a placeholder, really, in
appointee,
Delaware.
Right?
Appointee.
For Joe Biden's seat.
Another appointee in Illinois, Roland Burris, who is not going to run in 2010 and probably never was going to have any kind of a shot. So that's a wide open race for the Democrats and a big possibility of a loss. Chris Dodd in Connecticut, his numbers are still so far down. Is there a chance he would just decide to retire?
Well, there are some conflicting reports about that. People close to him say there's no way he's not going to run
no
again.
No way. Chris, he's a fighter.
For a sixth term. But a new poll came out in Connecticut this week that showed only a third of the people in Connecticut find him honest and trustworthy.
Yeah, that's
for somebody who's been around since 1980, when he was first elected to the Senate in 1980, that's not good numbers for Chris Dodd. I still don't think he's going to step down, but the news this week is that somebody from Countrywide Financial
Bob Feinberg, former loan officer, said, oh, he knew he was getting a special rate. I made sure he knew.
That's
I told
a sweetheart
him he knew.
Deal, right? Yeah, now, yeah. Dodd denies that, but again, it just, you know, just adds to the problems that Dodd has had for a couple of months, starting with his role or purported role in getting the AIG bonuses. It's not been a good year for Chris Dodd. And also, he has a new commercial up about how he's standing up to lobbyists when everybody knows that the pharmaceutical industry is spending a fortune on his reelection campaign. So it's just ridiculous.
He's in a tough spot. Okay, question mark then over Chris Dodd. Question mark in Texas. What is Kay Bailey Hutchison up to? This week she announced she was not going to vote for Sonia Sotomayor, which of course tells us she is thinking more about a Republican primary
next March, in her future,
than about a November election in a state that's 30% Hispanic.
But not for the Senate race. Not for the Senate race.
Not
that's not
for the
up for
Senate,
a while.
But for the governorship, which she is clearly interested in. She wants to challenge Rick Perry, who's the current Republican governor and has been since W left in December of 2000. So is she actually going to leave the Senate early? This week she told one radio station she was going to leave this fall. And then later in the day here in Washington, she said, well, I haven't really decided what I'm going to do yet. All I said was I might quit early if Rick Perry will quit his job early.
Which is so ridiculous. First of all, Rick Perry is leading in the polls. Second of all, there are a lot of conservatives who don't like Kay Bailey Hutchison, and a lot of people, a lot of Republican establishment are backing Rick Perry. My favorite part about the Rick Perry thing, though...
What's your favorite part about the Rick Perry
thing? I will tell you that right now, is that he, his press secretary, denounced the fact that Kay Bailey Hutchison might quit early.
She might be a quitter.
Even despite her pledge. Meanwhile, the most prominent Republican campaigning for Rick Perry is a woman by the name of Sarah Palin.
Oh, she's not a quitter.
No, not at all.
Now, speaking of Sarah, she has officially left the governorship of Alaska and become a private citizen. And here is one of the things that she said as she bid farewell to the Alaskan people.
For some, just some, in the media, democracy depends on you. And that is why, that's why our troops are willing to die for you. So, how about, in honor of the American soldier, you quit making things up.
I was moved by that portion of the former governor's speech. And Ken, I'm ready to take the pledge. Are you ready?
I think the media, as part of the media, I think I agree we should stop making things up.
All right. I personally pledge I will no longer make things up. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for what may be a fairly short It's All Politics from NPR.
Even Moses got excited when he saw the promised land. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyways. I was born.